Hello and welcome to another episode of the Jersey Ontario podcast. I'm your host, Eric Bauman. This month, we've got a feature interview with Daniel Rico about heat stress, and we'll make a trip to my creative corner. As always, if you like what you hear, please share the episode with a friend. If you have any comments or suggestions, please email us at jerseyontariopodcast@gmail.com. That's jerseyontariopodcast, all one word, @gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. Enjoy the show.
The kids only have a month of school left, which means summer is nearly upon us, which is typically accompanied by some lovely warm weather. But when it gets too hot in our barns, the performance of our animals begins to suffer, whether it is easily recognizable or not. Joining me today to dive into the topic of heat stress in dairy cows is Dr. Daniel Rico. Welcome, Daniel.
Hello, Eric. Thank you for having me.
I'm glad you could come on. So I want to talk a little bit first about your life story a little bit and what got you to this point. You're originally from Colombia. How did you end up in Quebec City studying dairy cows?
Well, that's a long road. But yes, I am originally from Colombia. I went to school in Colombia until, I did my undergrad there. And then, I come from a region which is the largest dairy producer region in the country. We produce with the cool season grasses, is the Holstein cows, is kind of what you would expect. The most developed sector of the dairy production in the country to be like. And I was actually interested in biology when I started. So I got into cows because of that, because there was a connection between biology and feeding humans. I think that was one of the main reasons I started to go in that path. My undergrad in animal science. I just remained interested in that topic, mainly on nutrition, because that's the thing I like. I really like nutrition. Cow nutrition is one of the things that I've been doing for a long time, and that was the main reason to stay in that path.
Okay, so just in terms of production, similar to New Zealand then?
Yeah, it's very similar. We have a rotational grazing, it's really controlled. We don't have smart grazing. So it's really developed in a sense. It's not super technified in the sense of milking equipment, if you compare it to New Zealand, some places, but the grazing management is really advanced, I would say.
Yes. Okay. And then you ended up in the United States.
Right. So at the end of your undergrad, you're supposed to do some research work. So I tried to go to somewhere where I could practice English. It was my main interest. So I found an internship in the US in Penn State University. And I found a person who worked with the dairy nutrition, Dr. Gabriela Varga. She was my first mentor.
Okay. And how long were you at Penn State for?
Well, after my internship, that was 6 months. I stayed for another 5 years because I did my master's and PhD in dairy nutrition. And my main interest shifted a little bit to go into milk quality. That was another thing that nutrition could affect strongly. It was a synthesis of milk fat. So that's how I ended up interested in milk quality.
Yes, you're a fat guy.
Yes, I'm a fat guy. I'm a yo-yo guy, but yeah. But yes, so that's when I came to Quebec City, and actually where we met at Laval University, because they were working on milk quality, and that's what I was interested in.
So for the listeners out there, Daniel and I actually lived together for a year and a half or 2 years in Quebec City while I was doing my master's and he was doing his postdoc. Now Daniel is moving on to heat stress a little bit.
Yeah, that's the thing maybe that is not an immediate link. There's no immediate connection with heat stress. But the way I got into this is because every summer you can see that there's a drop in the production of milk solids. So protein, lactose, milk fat are decreased during the summer months. My interest was milk fat because that's what I have been doing for a long time, mainly from the angle of nutrition. But there's other things that are not nutritionally related or related to nutrition that can affect milk fat. And I was wondering, why is this going down every time? Is it because the cows eat less? Is it because the forages are changing? The photo period is changing? There's a lot of things happening in summer.
Yes.
And why is it happening in Canada? Canada is not super hot, but it's still happening in Canada. And so that's how I got it. It's getting hot, yes.
It's getting warmer, for what that's worth. So let's start at the beginning on this topic. How is heat stress defined in dairy cows?
Well, if you go back a few decades, people used to talk in terms of just temperature. So like before the 1950s, it is really hot, and you can see that the cows are starting to have trouble a little bit. They change their behavior, they change productivity, they lower milk production, they reduce intake. And the quantification of that effect was difficult just using temperature, because you cannot really know what is the effect on the cow just with temperature. You know how you need to know what is the temperature that the animal actually experiences, and that has to do a lot with humidity.
Yes.
So then people developed this index in humans, and then it was adapted to the cow.
Right, because
successive iterations. Yes.
30 degrees in Florida isn't the same as 30 degrees in Arizona.
Correct. Yeah. So kind of the relationship is relatively simple. Yeah, of course, you increase temperature, the cow gets out of the comfort zone or the thermoneutral zone. And then it is not only affected by that linear increase in temperature, it's also affected by the humidity. So when you take those two into account, you can actually predict how the animal will experience that effect of temperature. And you call that the temperature humidity index. And it has been refined, THI. Yes.
Yes.
So that THI is really the temperature the temperature field that the animal experiences. And that really is a good predictor of performance or things that are going to happen to the cow. You can actually draw conclusions by looking at the THI more than you can just looking at temperature. So that's kind of the importance of that measurement.
In terms of the actual cow, what level does the THI need to be at before we start seeing some negative effects?
That's the thing. People proposed a few years ago, 72 THI. It would be a value that where you can see performance dropping clearly, but it is not so simple, because if you have a high producing cow, she already has some heat that she's producing on top of the environmental heat because she's producing more milk. So that metabolic heat generated by production is going to affect how sensitive she is to THI. And today you talk about 68 as a threshold, where she goes beyond 68 and she can experience these losses in productivity.
And that's expressed in THI in Fahrenheit.
Yeah, well, is that combined measurement? There's an equation that where you can calculate those two, but you basically have an increasing values of temperature, increasing values of humidity. You have this color chart, this really nice chart. We could pull it up if needed, but it really just shows that when those two increase in concert, you will have a higher THI. And when you go above 68, that's where you start losing productivity.
So when the temperature feels like roughly 20 degrees Celsius combined in temperature and humidity on the Celsius scale, then we start seeing some negative effects.
Yeah, that's if we put it into those terms, let's say if you're above 20 degrees and your humidity is above 50%, that is already a THI that begins to be a problem for the cow.
Okay.
But you could have a 28 degrees with a really, really, really low humidity, and then the cow will not be equally stressed. So it really depends on those two at the same time. That's why they have this color chart where you can locate yourself. Where are you today?
Right.
Is the reason for that.
So if we're standing in our barns looking at the cows under extreme heat stress, obviously cows are panting. They're standing, mostly trying to find a dark or a shady spot. Before we get to that point, what are the first signs that we're looking for when we look at a cow to identify whether she's suffering from heat stress?
Well, I think it's hard to see any other signs of heat stress other than those that you named, because the panting is a big evident change in the animal's behavior, or that reflects changes in the animal physiology. The laying time, she's going to spend more time trying to dissipate this heat, so she would be standing more than laying down, especially during the hottest part of the day. So those are one of the first things you can see. Actually, going from there into productivity, probably you have a harder time quantifying the productivity loss. So that would be a second instance. But the first thing that you see is the day-to-day, minute-to-minute adaptation of the cow to heat, which is what we would do normally. As you said, if there is radiation heat coming from the window, we get away from the window. The animal will try to do that. In a tie stall, it's more difficult than in a free stall. So those behavioral changes are the first things that we look at. Panting is probably a little bit more of a clear signal that the animal is trying to adapt to these changes in the environment, and these are very short term. Mm-hmm. Then there's a bunch of things that happen that we don't see below that explain why we see these changes in productivity.
So tell us a little bit about what's going on below the surface, things that we can't see but that are happening to affect her comfort and her ability to perform well.
There is a big issue when we talk about heat stress in animals. So when we get these really, really high values of THI, so the animal is producing less, in part because the intake is going down. But at some point, it's not only intake that explains why she has less nutrients for milk production. There's also problems happening at the level of the gut. And I think that's the main interesting story for me. Cows start experiencing inflammation. It's like they were dealing with an infection,
okay,
a pathogen. But there is no pathogen, really. There is no virus. There is no bacteria that is increasing the environment necessarily. It's just the gut becomes leaky. And with these holes in your gut, you're going to allow for more bacteria to go into circulation. And that triggers an inflammatory response. So the immune system has to fight this infection, quote-unquote right. infection. And that takes a lot of energy. So those immune cells start using the energy that they would use for making lactose to make milk. And they use it to fight the infection that the animal is experiencing because of this leaky gut. So that's a main reason why you cannot predict the drop in productivity of the cow by just looking at how much dry matter intake changed. Because okay. those relationships are not linear. It's not like she's eating less, so she produces less. It's she's eating less, and on top of that, there is another layer of productivity that is lost just because she's dealing with this quote-unquote infection. And that's a big issue to deal with when we get to the higher values of THI. Yeah.
Have you been able to quantify in any way the performance lost from this leaky gut and the inflammatory response?
Well, yeah, it varies depending on the productivity level of the cow, but you could say that somewhere around 30% on top of what is explained by dry matter intake, at a minimum, is explained by this inflammatory response or leaky gut. These problems at the level of the gut give you that extra loss that you cannot explain. And this is something that we can know doing research. You can make two groups of animals eat at the same level. One of them is eating less because she's in heat stress. The other group, we are restricting so that the two groups have the same level of intake.
Right.
So then if there's any differences between them, we know why, because it's not intake, it's something else.
It's so the heat stress.
It is the heat stress by itself. So we can quantify the heat stress effect by itself. And it is at least 30%. Some people have reported up to 50, 60% extra reductions in productivity or milk yield beyond what is explained by dry matter intake.
Are we able to address this somehow? When the cow is suffering heat stress, can we still help her fight that inflammatory response or to minimize the inflammatory response? I mean, we can't change the weather, but can we help with the inflammatory response?
That's exactly what we were interested in doing in these projects that we have been doing at the research center in Quebec. It's actually looking at the possibility that maybe with nutrition, you can modulate the inflammatory response. Inflammation is normal. It's a good response to face the challenges of pathogens in general. So we don't want to decrease or completely eliminate the inflammatory response. We want to modulate it so that it doesn't hurt the animal, which is, we call that a cytokine storm. It's like a problem when it's out of control, inflammation. But in normal conditions, it's not a problem. One of the ways to modulate that inflammatory response is with a nutrient such as vitamin D that we get from the sun, that we all have heard that story. There's omega-3 fatty acids. There's other molecules that could have anti-inflammatory effects that modulate that response, and the animal will end up experiencing improved comfort under those conditions. Actually, that's really what we showed in our own research. we supplement, for example, 2 times as much vitamin D as is recommended by the nutrient requirements of daily cattle from the US guidelines, for example, 2 or 3 times, where somewhere there, the animals experience a reduction of almost one degree Celsius in,
oh wow,
in rectal temperatures. It's pretty impressive, the effect. And just because we are dealing with the, let's call it, fever response, which is associated with inflammation. It's like, right, we get sick, we get fever because the immune system is activated.
Yeah,
it's one of the responses. So cows are doing the same. They already have this heat from the environment that they're just unable to completely dissipate. And on top of that, they have leaky gut, inflammation, and that increases even further the production of heat. So if you modulate the immune response with these types of interventions that are not necessarily super difficult to do, then you can modulate temperature in the animals. So this is promising.
So you addressed how much vitamin D, roughly 2 times. You talked a little bit about omega-3, or you mentioned that. What is the story with omega-3 supplementation and heat stress?
It would be a similar effect to what we see with vitamin D3, but it's just a type of lipid that modulates metabolism of animals and that we normally don't have a requirement for. It's not very clear how much an animal needs. As we have requirements for vitamins, we don't have those requirements clearly established for essential fatty acids. So if you ask someone what is the requirement for omega-3, omega-6, we know that there is a requirement, but the quantification is not something that is very clear. And it could be that in periods of stress where the immune system is hyperactivated, let's call it like that, this requirement is even higher to modulate inflammation. So when we give these lipids, we protect them from the rumen, they get into circulation, they act on inflammation pathways in immune cells, and they modulate that response just to keep the fire a little bit lower.
Right.
But it's not completely shutting down the fire of inflammation. It's just modulating it and allowing the cow to reduce temperature, probably eat a little bit more and produce a little bit more.
Okay, so in your research, you were supplementing vitamin D3 and omega-3s.
Separate experiments, yes.
So what were the sources that you were using for these supplements? Where were you getting them and how were you including them in the diet?
Oh, well, this is regular vitamin D that you can find it in the meal. Vitamin D3 is a type of vitamin called calciferol. That's exactly what you find in your formulas for dairy cattle. It's nothing new. And that's the thing. That's the beauty of it, I think. It's not a special product that you have to get from a company that you don't know exactly what it is. It's a simple vitamin D3 that you can find in any formula. You just modulate the concentrations for facing the summer months. That's one possibility. Depending on the challenge that you have at your own farm, because not every farm is equally challenged in terms of ventilation and all of these things that you could do to help cows. And then the omega-3s, those are a real challenge because the technology is not there yet to have a perfect protection of these fatty acids. Because if you just put them in the rumen, if you give a cow fish oil, which is what we used, you put it in the rumen, it's going to have negative effects on ruminal microbiota. So that could affect fiber digestion. It could affect milk fat synthesis. We know this because people have studied this specifically for milk fat. So it's not a good idea to put it in the rumen. So what we need to do now is to put it in the true stomach of the animal that we call the abomasum. And that's what we did. We protected them from the rumen that way. Now we need companies that develop these types of protections that can really protect these omega-3s from ruminal degradation and deliver those in the intestine. So that's the challenge now.
So for the omega-3, we need a product which is rumen protective so that we can include it in our TMR without it negatively affecting gut health at the level of the rumen. It would pass on to the omasum and then have the protective effects on the rest of the intestinal tract.
Correct. Yeah, so that could reduce intestinal leakiness, reducing inflammation, and allowing cows to divert that energy for production rather than dealing with this quote-unquote infection. That's kind of the rationale that we have for all of these experiments.
Okay. This has been really interesting on a broad sense for all breeds. This is a Jersey podcast. Are there differences between the breeds when it comes to dealing with heat stress, or differences between the breeds at what level they experience heat stress and how they respond in terms of productive losses?
Yeah, I've been working always with Holstein cows. It would be nice to one day transition into the Jersey, because they are really remarkable in many senses when it comes to heat stress. One of the things that you already know, of course, is that these are smaller animals, and when you talk about the size, the total mass of an animal, there's an interesting relationship between the surface and their mass. That smaller animals will have a larger surface to mass ratio. So that means they have more surface area, let's say, on the skin to dissipate this extra heat load. So they will have an easier time, relatively speaking, compared to a Holstein cow. That's one of the things that could potentially, in theory, help Jersey cows. And there is some evidence of that. There's a study that I just found from last year, I think it was in Korea, where they actually compared these two breeds, Jerseys versus Holsteins, and they see that these animals actually have an advantage. When you increase the THI, I think it was around from 60 to 80, close to 80, 84,
yeah,
which is really, really, really hot.
Yes.
The bigger increases in rectal temperatures and respiratory rates, which are clinical signs of stress in the animal, were observed for the Holstein cow relative to the Jerseys. So you could say, well, this is evidence that these mechanisms of heat dissipation in Jerseys are working a little bit better than in Holstein cows. So there is some evidence to support that. Also, other research that was done earlier that shows that reproductive losses are a little bit less dramatic facing a heat stress challenge in Jerseys versus Holsteins.
So if the Jersey breed is slightly better at handling periods of heat stress, let's speculate a little bit or guess a little bit. If they experience less heat stress, would you expect to see the same positive response to increased supplementation of the vitamin D3 or omega-3 oils?
Well, yeah, that's a good question. Well, I would expect that the animal that responds the best is the animal that has more to gain. So let's say if these Jersey cows experience a lower degree of challenge, then their intestinal health is likely to be a little bit better compared to the Holstein. And she's not going to experience as much of an increase or a gain in comfort because she was not that challenged to begin with.
Right.
It's because her physiological facility, easiness, or how she deals with the heat. So I would probably expect a bigger impact in the Holstein, but that doesn't mean that the Jersey is not challenged as well. She would be challenged, but to a lesser degree. And another factor that is important here is, are we talking about high producing Jerseys, or are we talking about medium productivity level Jerseys or Holsteins for that matter? Because productivity level is one of those factors that really affects metabolic heat production and accumulates with environmental environmental heat load.
Right.
So a cow producing 50 kilos, Jersey or Holstein, doesn't matter her breed, she's going to be more challenged.
Right.
So you can think of that in terms of production level too.
That's
an important issue. Yeah.
I know that in our barn, heat stress is always an issue in the summer months, and we've tried a few different physical changes to the barn in order to alleviate those heat stress issues. We have had mixed degrees of success with that, and we're looking at next steps. But I'm certainly interested always to learn about other things that we can try, such as, you know, modulating the nutrition a little bit and helping alleviate her stress in that way as well. So this has been very illuminating.
That's a good point, because I've gotten this question before. If I think that nutrition is going to solve all problems, like we shouldn't care about adapting facilities for cows to face this heat challenge that is coming every year more and more. No, it's just a complementary strategy. And of course, on top of that, you can think of facility adaptation that will make it easier, ventilation, things like that can help the cows. But so this is complementary. And it's likely that it has a bigger impact in places where the challenge is higher, especially when we're thinking about these inflammation-related strategies. because it would not happen when the degree of stress is very mild. This is at higher levels of stress. So it depends on the barn where you're going to see
these effects. It's a puzzle, and there's different pieces, and you can only complete the puzzle if you have all the pieces in place, and the physical management, such as fans or curtains and shade areas, are some pieces of the puzzle, and the nutrition is a different piece of the puzzle, but maybe a bigger piece of the puzzle than we would have thought 10 or 15 years ago.
Yeah, and there is more things to do. Like I mentioned a couple of things that we have done, but there's other people who have been working on this for years. So this is by no means an exhaustive list of things that you can do. There's people who think you can also feed supplemental fats, particularly saturated fats. Let's say something that is a mix of different types of lipids, like stearic acid, palmitic acid, that you can give to the animals. Those approaches are valid as well, because not every food has the same nutrient profile, and some of those profiles could be beneficial in terms of heat production. So, for example, if you give a high protein diet, the heat generated from digesting and processing all of this protein is higher compared to that of lower protein diets or diets that have lipids or carbohydrates. Increasing your energy density, energy availability for the cow with fats, for example, or maybe with a little bit of concentrates. Those are strategies that make sense too. And there's some evidence that they can help cows. There's also other things that people have tried, like feeding vitamin B3, that is called niacin,
okay,
which would help cows dissipate heat through the skin. So these type of things, there's a long list of things that we can do, and it's just we have to choose where to go with each one of them.
Yeah, and we don't all have time to research the entire list, so. That's why we are very happy when people like you come on and help us understand some of the different moving parts and are able to explain that in layman's terms almost today.
I hope, yes.
Daniel, thank you very much for coming on. It's been very nice to have you on. I always like chatting with you. It's very interesting every time, and I wish you all the best in the research that you have yet to do on heat stress, and I hope that you are able to find some further useful results and information that we would be able to then use and apply in our farms to help us become more efficient, more productive going forward.
Thank you for having me. That was great. Thank you.
I got thinking that it could be neat to have a little creative variety on the show every once in a while, so I dug up an old piece of writing and reworked it a little to share with you. Just a moment in time. It is one of those mid-August evenings, warm and humid with the promise of falling temperatures overnight that serve warning of the approaching autumn. The sun slowly slipped towards its resting place beneath the horizon, beyond the row of trees to the west of the barn. The barn seemed as much a part of the earth as the trees and the babbling brook that ran beside them. The thick walls of stacked fieldstone supporting the hay mow of gray, weathered boards were probably older than some of the trees and would likely long outlive others. For decades, the barn had sheltered and been home to countless generations of cows and calves. The milking was finished, and inside the barn, the cows were licking up the last of their evening grain feeding. The small brown beasts strained against their chains and stretched out their tongues for the last bits of barley and corn that lay scattered on the concrete in front of them. As I moved forward to begin unchaining them, their pattern of movement changed. They continued straining against the chains, but now with their necks stretched backwards towards the alley that led to the door. As the animals were freed from their stalls, they stepped across the gutter and pushed their way outside. I turned up the alley and began herding the stragglers out of the barn, the old cows who moved through life at a slower pace, and the young heifers who hadn't quite figured it out yet. With the cows out of the barn and moving toward the pasture, calmness reigned. It was a quiet evening, the noise and busyness of the labored day slipping away like water rippling through the creek by the trees. The cats were gathered on a low row of straw bales, resting after a heavy day of napping and sitting in the sun. As I turned down the lights in the barn, the copper-toned dog perked up from his nap and followed as I went out and began walking the path the cows had taken toward the pasture. On the left, a small embankment led down to the creek, and the dog bounded ahead and plunged in for a swim. On the right, beyond the old rail fence and the rows of round bales, lay the pasture, with its tones of emerald timothy and jade alfalfa and dotted with white specks of milkweed flowers opening up with the onset of late summer. The pasture was also empty, with not a single cow in sight. I stood at the gate and sighed. I turned and faced west toward the embankment that led down to the creek and the stony plain beyond it, let out a long whistle, and waited. I felt the cows before I saw them, felt them as a tremor in the ground. The earth shivered beneath my feet with the drumbeat of hooves busily pounding the ground and splashing through the creek. By now the sun had fallen below the tree line, and above, the sky burned crimson, then faded to pink, yellow, navy, and eventually black. From this backdrop, the first cows appeared, and soon it was a herd of black shapes moving from the shadows towards me and transforming into individuals. Individuals with distinctly colored coats of brown and black, unique white spots, and particularly shaped faces. They were just cows, but in that moment, as they slowed in front of me, they were also so much more. In that moment, the cows became my connection with something bigger. I could feel their warmth, I could hear their breath, and I could sense their trust. Beyond them, the fire of the setting sun continued to burn, only ever so slightly abated by the descending dusk that pulled the black curtain toward the horizon. At my sides, the cows nudged me for individual attention, craving a subtle scratch behind the ears or a gentle pat on the nose. I obliged each one, and as I did, they began to meander off toward the darkness of the pasture and the promise of fresh feed. Time rushes by us like a cold winter wind, but it leaves us with moments. Farming, with all its highs and its lows, gives us some of the best moments any person could hope for. For myself, I think back to that moment in that pasture, surrounded by a herd of Jersey cows and chaperoned by the ghost of the setting sun. It was a moment that connected me to the universe and to its maker. It was just a moment in time, but a moment worth holding on to. Well, that's all for this month's episode. Please join us again next month. We'll be taking a look back and a look forward with a pair of producer profiles. So long for now.